This is Melville Christian Radio with our national news report. In a significant victory for religious liberty advocates, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit has ruled in favor of Valerie Klosterman, a physician assistant fired by the University of Michigan Health West in 2021 after she declined to support gender transition procedures and pronoun usage that conflicted with her Christian beliefs. The court's decision clears the way for Klosterman's lawsuit to move forward in federal court rather than being forced into arbitration. Her legal team had argued that the move was a last-minute attempt by the hospital to avoid public accountability. Today's decision is a reckoning for institutions that discriminate and punish caring people of faith like Valerie Klosterman, said Kayla Tony, counsel at First Liberty Institute, one of the firms representing Klosterman. It was intolerant of University of Michigan Health to fire Valerie because of her religious beliefs, and now the Sixth Circuit has recognized that they cannot avoid accountability by hiding the case in arbitration. The appeals court sharply rebuked Michigan's Health's attempt to move the case out of court, stating that the hospital could not play heads I win, tails you lose with the judicial process. According to First Liberty, the court noted that Klosterman had previously received exemplary performance reviews, had a stellar reputation among patients, and treated all patients the same regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity. After being fired in 2021, Klosterman, who worked for 17 years in the healthcare system, had filed a lawsuit claiming she was mistreated for refusing to use preferred pronouns or refer patients for gender reassignment surgeries. These requests, made through a workplace survey, prompted her to seek a religious accommodation. Instead, she says, she was met with hostility. They asked me very specifically, will you use preferred pronouns and will you refer for gender surgery? I said, I cannot do that. Klosterman previously told CBN News, we're made in the image of God. It is not something we can just choose to be. During that interview with CBN News, she contended that one equity supervisor called her evil and blamed her for unrelated suicides of people suffering from gender confusion. She also asserted she was prohibited from bringing a Bible or faith to work. Klosterman's firing came about a month later. Kevin Konosky, an attorney with Clemens & Murphy, PLLC, who argued the case at the Sixth Circuit, praised the ruling by the Sixth Circuit, saying, Valerie loves her community and her job. She was devastated when University of Michigan health officials derided her beliefs and fired her after 17 years of dedicated service. We applaud the court's decision today that ensures Valerie will receive her day in court. In an email to CBN News, University of Michigan Health West stated the organization does not discuss personal issues, then that its commitment to providing appropriate medical treatment to all patients and respect the religious beliefs of its employees. The ruling arrives amid broader national debates over medical conscious rights and the clash between religious freedom and institutional diversity policies. Religious liberty advocates see Klosterman's case as a potential legal precedent. No patient had ever asked her to use preferred pronouns. No patient ever asked her for gender refill drugs or surgeries. This was all hypothetical. Tony previously stated. To be fired for your faith is just the most traumatic event you could imagine. Klosterman is seeking reinstatement and damages for financial loss. Legal experts say the case could strengthen protections for medical professionals who seek religious accommodation, especially as several states consider laws safeguarding medical conscience. Meanwhile, the University of Michigan recently announced that it had ended gender transition treatment for minors under the age of 19. It comes as national scrutiny intensifies towards transgender procedures on children. As the case moves forward, Klosterman's faith is resolute. I think God's being glorified. I think the truth is being spoken in love. And you move forward and you trust God. That's what we'll call to do. A federal judge on Sunday temporarily blocked the deportation of some 600 Guatemalan children by the Trump administration. The order came as some of the children sat on flights waiting to take off for Guatemala. The judge said the government violated their rights to due process and ignored protections for minors who crossed the border alone. Attorney Ephraim Olivares of the National Immigration Law Center said it defies any reason or logic. The cruelty of the most powerful, the richest country in the world, going after a 7-year-old and preventing him from even talking to a judge about his immigration case. However, the Trump administration insisted it was acting at Guatemala's request to reunite those minors with their parents. The ruling comes as President Trump is now threatening to deploy the National Guard in Chicago, in part over illegal immigration. Speaking on Chicago crime, Trump said, "Everybody knows how bad it is." On Truth Social, Trump said Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker was crazy for saying he doesn't need federal help and wanted the Democratic government to get control of the crime problem in Chicago, writing, "Better straighten it out fast or we're coming." Pritzker accused the White House of secretly planning an invasion, telling CBS they ought to let us know when they're coming, where they're coming, if it's ICE or if it's ATF or whoever it is. But they don't want to do that either. And I must say it's disruptive. It's dangerous. It tends to inflame passions on the ground when they don't let us know what their plans are. Chicago's mayor condemned any plan to surge federal officers into the nation's third largest city and has barred his police department from helping federal authorities with civil immigration enforcement or any related patrols. Mayor Brandon Johnson said, "We will not have our police officers who are working hard every single day to drive down crime deputized to do traffic stops and checkpoints for the president." Meanwhile, it's been another bloody weekend of crime in Chicago, with 43 shot and 7 murdered. U.S. Attorney for D.C. Jeannie Pirio defended Trump's guard deployment to fight crime in cities, telling Fox, "What we need is to recognize that the first order of government is protection of its people. If anyone has a problem with that, then you know they're not in compliance with the 81% of the American people who think crime is a major problem in large cities." Rudy Giuliani is recovering from a fractured vertebra and other injuries following a car crash in New Hampshire in which he was a passenger, a spokesman for the former New York City mayor said Sunday. Giuliani was being driven in a rented Ford Bronco by his spokesperson, Ted Goodman, when their vehicle was struck from behind by a Honda HR-V driven by a 19-year-old woman late Saturday evening, New Hampshire State Police said in a statement. Troopers witnessed the crash, which caused both vehicles to hit the highway median and left them heavily damaged, state police said. Goodman and the 19-year-old suffered non-life-threatening injuries and were taken to hospitals for treatment, the agency added. State police said they are investigating the crash and no charges have been filed. Giuliani, 81, was taken to a nearby trauma center and was being treated for a fractured thoracic vertebrae, multiple lacerations and contusions, as well as injuries to his left arm and lower leg, according to a statement posted on Next by Michael Ragusa, Giuliani's head of security. Giuliani sustained injuries but is in good spirits and recovering tremendously, he said, adding this was not a targeted attack. Prior to the accident, Giuliani had been flagged down by a woman who was the victim of a domestic violent incident and contacted police assistance on their behalf. Ragusa said, after police arrived, Giuliani continued on his way and his vehicle was hit shortly after pulling onto the highway in a crash that was entirely unrelated to the domestic violence incident, Ragusa told the Associated Press in an email statement. State police said troopers were investigating a domestic violence report on the southbound Interstate 93 highway shortly before 10 p.m. and observed the crash which occurred on the northbound lanes. Troopers and fire personnel quickly crossed to provide help. New Hampshire State Police declined to comment on whether Giuliani had contacted the agency regarding the account of a domestic violence incident. Goodman did not respond to requests for comment, and Giuliani's team did not provide additional details about the circumstances surrounding the crash. Thank you to all the people that have reached out since learning the news about my father, Andrew Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani's son, wrote in a post on X. Your prayers mean a lot. And the Minnesota Governor Tim Walz reportedly denied Catholic schools' request for a small security budget, despite having $17 billion surplus and giving similar grants to public schools. The Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public voice for the state's six dioceses, asked Walz twice in 2 years for a small security grant to protect against school shootings, according to a report by the National Catholic Register. There are approximately 72,000 students enrolled in independent Catholic, Jewish, Christian, and Muslim non-public schools in our state. The 2023 letter from the Minnesota Catholic Conference to Walz read, the latest school shooting at a non-public Christian school in Tennessee sadly confirms what we already know. Our schools are under attack. The letter continued, referring to the March 2023 mass shooting at the Covenant School in Nashville, Tennessee, carried out by 28-year-old Andrew Hale, who identified as a transgender. The Minnesota Catholic Conference, however, was denied, but similar security grants were reportedly handed out to public schools. In 2023, while asking for assistance, the Minnesota Catholic Conference went on to ask to be included in Walz's budget recommendations of $50 million to establish the Building and Cybersecurity Grant Program, noting the exclusion of one sector of schools. As you know, non-public schools serve many students and families in need of services and resources. It is a discriminatory act against our students. Since 2020, non-public schools have been advocating to be part of the Safe Schools program that provides funding to school districts for emergency response training, security upgrades, and mental health services and security resources. The letter continued. The legislation, supported by our collective organizations, provides state aid to school districts, intermediate school districts, charter schools, and non-public schools for this program. Unfortunately, this program currently does not cover non-public schools, charter schools, and intermediate school districts, and is a levy-only program for school districts, Minnesota Catholic Conference added. Moreover, the request arrived when Minnesota was running a $17.6 billion budget surplus in 2023, National Catholic Register noted. In 2022, after a bill to expand the funding to non-public schools stalled, Minnesota's bishop urged Walsh to call a special session and pass an expansion to Safe Schools, the outlet reported. The measure would have provided $44 per student for security costs, regardless of their school's affiliation. The House version of the bill was supported by multiple members of the Democrat Farmer Labor Party, the Minnesota affiliate of the National Democratic Party, indicating bipartisan support. However, Walsh did not call a special session to pass the legislation, National Catholic Register added. Walsh, meanwhile, used state taxpayer dollars in 2023 to create a trans refuge to protect those seeking gender-affirming care. Outfront Minnesota reported that year. The suspect accused of going on a shooting rampage at Annunciation Catholic Church in Minneapolis that left 2 dead and 44 wounded was transgender. The scripture, God made them male and female, is being ignored by a culture that encourages and celebrates being transgender. For many who went far enough to take steps, including surgery, to alter their gender, the regret is enormous. Now many of them are warning others not to make the same mistake. 18-year-old Chloe Cole, a self-described former trans kid, is leading the fight to protect children from transgender surgeries. Chloe detransitioned following years of taking puberty blockers and an irreversible double mastectomy at the age of 15. We need to stop telling 12-year-olds that they were born wrong, that they have a right to reject their own bodies and feel uncomfortable in their own skin. We need to stop telling children that puberty is an option, that they can choose what kind of puberty they will go through. My childhood was ruined, along with thousands of detransitioners that I know through our network. This needs to stop, she said. In her book, The Trans, True Stories of Escaping the Gender Ideology Cult, Mary Margaret Olahan writes that many of these young people wanted to find themselves and had no idea of the impact transitioning would have on them. They were told that the reason that they didn't feel comfortable at school, the reasons they didn't have a lot of friends, the reason that they didn't feel special is because they weren't in the right body. And if they got into this right body, that all of their problems would disappear and they would feel better and content and fulfilled. And of course, this is a lie, Olahan told CBN News. She contends that what proponents label gender-affirming care is really puberty and hormone blockers, followed in many cases by gender mutilation surgeries in which there is also no going back. A lot of these girls got double mastectomies which I call top surgery, before they were legal adults. In fact, I've heard of girls who were so mentally ill, as all of these young detransitioners are. They were so mentally ill that when they went in for their double mastectomies, they asked the doctors how long it will take for them to grow back, because there's no understanding of what's actually going on here, she said. There's no proper explanations from the doctors about what the ramifications of these procedures are. And so a lot of these girls go into this thinking that they're going to emerge looking just like a boy with a perfectly flat chest. But at the end of the day, what they're left with is very gruesome looking scars that lace across their chest that are black. So these are just very invasive and tragic surgeries, Olahan said. As more detransitioners start telling their story, Olahan sees a common denominator among the young people who are now regretting their decision to transition to a different sex. I would say yes, and there comes a point when they think, okay, I've done what I was told to do. The doctor said I would be better and be happier after this. And then there's a moment when they realize, wait, I'm not happier. I'm not better. I still have very serious mental health issues. And for a lot of the detransitioners, that's the point where they wake up and realize, if I was lied to about this, what else was I lied to about? Olahan said. Olahan said that although parents share responsibility, they are often faced with a fighting ultimatum by doctors who ask, would you rather have a dead daughter or a living son? And they look the parents in the eyes and they say this. And the parents love their kids. They do not want their child to hurt themselves. And so they trust the doctors and they move forward. And so this is truly a really incredible betrayal by the medical system, she said. And while these kids are celebrating when they transition, Olahan says those who didn't try to reverse it can face attacks or rejection. If a detransitioner speaks up and says, I went through those puberty blockers, I went through the hormones, I got the surgery, and I'm not better. In fact, I'm much worse. I'm missing body parts. That completely contradict the narrative that these trans activists are selling, that transitioning is beautiful and brave and wonderful and will only make you happier, Olahan said. And so when these transitioners speak up, they're met with a lot of hate, a lot of vitriol, a lot of bitterness and anger. And they're told that you were never actually transgender and that you're a traitor. All kinds of horrible things. And let's not forget that the detransitioners themselves used to feel very lonely, very awkward. They desperately wanted to fit in. So this is incredibly hard for them when the group that accepted them and told them they were special and brave for being transgender is now saying, get away from us, you're scum, Olahan said. I speak to you in the hope that you will have the courage to bring this scandal to an end and ensure that other vulnerable teenagers and young adults don't go through what I went through. Even children have been victimized by this barbaric pseudoscience. Please let me be your final warning, she said. Multiple Florida school districts will try a drone response system designed to confront and subdue active shooters in schools using less lethal weaponry. Newsweek reports that several school districts in Florida are taking technology-based approach to combat the threat of school shootings. The districts are set to trial a drone response system that aims to confront and subdue an assailant, buying time for law enforcement to arrive at the scene. The system, developed by Texas-based manufacturer Canvas Guardian Angel, can be activated within 5 seconds of a silent alarm being triggered. The company claims that the drones can confront the shooter within 15 seconds. When not in use, the drones are stored on charging pads across the campus and are remotely piloted by a team of employees at the company's headquarters in Austin. Campus Guardian Angel CEO Justin Marston drew a comparison between the drone system and sprinkler systems found in every school. He stated, "The sprinkler system is able to put water on the fire in seconds because it's already there. You still want the fire trucks to come. You still want the guys with the hose pipes to show up. But since sprinkler systems were installed, there hasn't really been a mass fire in a school that killed a bunch of children. The quick response time of the system is largely due to the presence of a significant number of drones on each campus." In an interview with CBS News, Marston revealed that the company places between 30 to 90 drones in every school. The drones are agile, capable of reaching indoor speeds of up to 50 miles an hour, and equipped with a glass breaker to help navigate through potential obstacles. Each drone carries pepper spray pellets designed to blind or slow down an attacker. In the event that these measures fail, the drones themselves can be used as a weapon, Marston told CBS. "If somebody persists in wanting to murder children, then our system will just continue to hit them with drones until law enforcement is on the scene." The drones are intended to work in conjunction with local law enforcement, assisting them by clearing corners and distracting the suspect. "We feed live video to police, show exactly what's happening, where the suspect is, and even smash through windows with a glass punch to create distraction," Marston told Newsweek. "This tactic, like during the SAS's famous hostage rescue at the Iranian embassy in London, can give officers a huge advantage." However, the use of drones in school raises several logistical and ethical questions. Coordinating the actions of remotely piloted drones with law enforcement during an active shooter situation could prove challenging and potentially waste valuable time. These are also concerns regarding the familiarity of drone operators with each school's layout, their level of training, and their ability to make life or death decisions. The security and reliability of the drones, particularly in the face of internet connectivity issues, is another point of concern. Additionally, the presence of drones could potentially escalate the situation, causing a shooter to panic and act more desperately. Campus Guardian Angel recently demonstrated the system at 2 Florida high schools, funded by $557,000 in state money approved by Governor Ron DeSantis as part of the 2025 budget. The company aims to install permanent systems in September and October, with a fully operational live service at a trial school by January. President Trump's job approval ratings has hit a personal record high in a poll from the far-left Associated Press. After more than 6 months in office and 2 weeks after ordering the National Guard into Washington, D.C. to aid local police in fighting the Democratic-run city's epidemic of violent crime, Trump's job approval ratings jumped 5 points from 40 to 45% in July. In this particular poll, that 45% is a record high, reaching back to when the AP first started tracking the president's job approval in 2016. A bunch of fascist staffers are threatening to walk out if the far-left Vanity Fair puts First Lady Melania Trump on the cover. "I will walk out the mother effing door and half my staff will follow me," a mid-level editor told the Daily Mail about the proposal. This came just after news broke that there was an internal effort at Vanity Fair to convince the First Lady to agree to a cover shoot. Vanity Fair obviously has a serious hate problem within its ranks and should waste no time in making the haters' dream come true about a job at Trader Joe's. As though it's a bad thing, the far-left New York Times reported that for the first time in decades, the immigration population has dropped in the U.S. For the first time in decades, more immigrants are leaving the United States than arriving, a new study finds, the Times reported, adding that this signifies an early indication that President Trump's hardline immigration agenda is leading people to depart, whether through deportation or by choice. An analysis of new census data released found that between January and June, the foreign-born population in the United States, both lawful and unlawful residents, declined by nearly 1.5 million, the report continued. In June, the country was home to 51.9 million immigrants, down from 53.3 million 6 months earlier. Gross domestic product rose up 3.3% annualized rate in the second quarter, up from the Commerce Department's initial 3.0% estimate and above the 3.1% pace economists had forecast. The acceleration followed modest growth in the first quarter. The upward revision reflected household spending more on health care, pharmaceuticals, and dining out, while companies boosted purchases of equipment and intellectual property. Excuse me. Business investment was driven by stronger outlays on software, research and development, light trucks, and commercial structure. Price pressures remained in check. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, the Federal Reserve Preferred Inflation Gauge, increased at a 2% annual rate, matching the central bank's market. Core prices, which exclude volatile food and energy costs, advanced at 2.5%. The White House is considering a move to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug. However, it comes at a time when cannabis poisonings have sharply increased, mostly among teens and children. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Scott Turner is directing his agency to help nearly 20,000 teens each year to avoid becoming homeless, when they age out of the nation's foster care. And Christian school clubs in Oakland, California won a major court victory as a federal judge ruled that the city's unified school district must allow Christians the same access as other clubs under the First Amendment. And a 13-year-old Missouri boy is making a miraculous recovery after he fell hundreds of feet into a ravine and was lost for 3 days without food and water. Arizona's Grand Canyon College, a Christian school, has won another legal battle, first waged by the Biden administration. The Federal Trade Commission unanimously dropped its lawsuit against the school for what the FTC earlier called illegal telemarketing practices. The woman behind the highly successful Auntie Anne's Pretzels company tells her incredible story of gaining freedom from a predator pastor and battling decades of depression. Jesus is King, actor Chris Pratt sends a heartfelt message of love to his son Jack after his 13th birthday. And more than 30 years ago, acclaimed singer-songwriter Sinéad responded to an altar call because she was moved by the power in worship music. Today, she writes songs that bring others to the Lord. Charlene Ahrens talks to Sinéad in this week's Prior Link. A New York teenager is fighting back after a school banned her from painting a Bible verse in a paid student parking lot. Other students are allowed to paint non-religious message. And at Washington's Museum of the Bible, NBA star Jonathan Isaac unveiled a new display and delivered a stirring message honoring the Lord. And finally, Ephraim Graham sits down for a conversation with the Christian band Mercy Me. The group has a new musical project called Wonder in Awe. Get a first look at the film Sarah's Oil, plus another preview of the film How to Train Your Dragon, all on Studio 5. And this concludes our weekly national news report brought to you by Mulberry Christian Radio. Until next time, have a blessed week.